Hello, and welcome to Charles Sturt News, reporting from all around New South Wales. I'm Valentine Eldman, and today's pieces are themed around the impact of COVID-19 and its effects on society. Our first story is from Zoe Morris about the impact of the coronavirus on the building industry.
Both residential and commercial sectors of the building industry have felt the effects from the coronavirus pandemic. As businesses and people shy away from committing to major projects amidst economic uncertainty, many companies have reported the cancellation of multi-million dollar projects. Site manager for Wiley's construction company, Christopher Newland, said,
"There's been a lot of issues like cancelled contracts, travelling contractors and increased timelines which present added costs."
Commercial projects are not the only ones under assault, as many tradies have reported a significant loss in residential investments, where projects have predicted to drop from 160,000 to 100,000. The construction and property sector amounts for 1 in 4 jobs in New South Wales and about 8% of GDP, which have shown significant flow-on effects through the economy.
"Without the building industry still operating, the economy would be much worse off than it already is."
A second wave of job losses is predicted in the industry in 3 to 4 months' time, leaving many people questioning a stimulus package to the sector.
"The reality is that those who haven't lost their job now are concerned about the economic fallout after Corona and the uncertainty of future building ventures."
Although most construction sites are still operating, the reality of impending adversity needs to be a priority for our politicians. I'm Zoe Morris for 2MCE News.
Next, Emily Minnie to talk about the new Good Neighbour program being developed by the Blue Mountains City Council.
Blue Mountains City Council has developed the Good Neighbour program to assist senior citizens and people with disabilities. The program aims to alleviate the pressures of the COVID-19 pandemic and improve mental well-being. Council employee Beth Thomas explains the project.
First one is emergency food boxes. So we partnered with a not-for-profit organisation called the Rapid Relief Team, and we've organised emergency food boxes to go out to those who are isolated and vulnerable. Our pop-up library program, which is now a delivery service for those who are isolated and vulnerable. So that's where what our program is, and it's just designed to allow some of that social connection and community support at that safe, self-isolated distance.
The program has been met with success in Blue Mountains communities, with information reaching 40,000 people through social media without any paid advertising.
"It is something that people want and they appreciate, and it's positive good news they want to share."
The project originated at Penrith City Council, who shared their ideas with the neighbouring Blue Mountains Council.
"You know, we benefited from the fact that we have a good relationship with our neighbouring council, and it was something they'd found valuable, and they passed it on to us as a, hey, this might be something your community would benefit from, and we couldn't have agreed more, and so we sort of took it and then have built on it since then. So it's kind of nice because it gives you the freedom to tailor it to your community and what they need."
Blue Mountains residents can join the Good Neighbour program by downloading the calling card from the Blue Mountains Council website and informing their neighbours.
"They launched a calling card that gave neighbours a really easy way they could reach out to people they may not know and say, if you're, say, elderly or disabled or self-isolating for health reasons, I'm your neighbour, I'm here to help. Here's how I can do that." It's certainly a wonderful campaign, and it's really nice to be able to work on something that's so positive and is purely about helping other people.
Emily Minnie, 2MCE.
Our next story is by Selfie Ells on the topic of bushfire funding and how the virus has affected those caught in the fires.
After a devastating start to the year with the horrific bushfires, there has been no time for small impacted communities to rebuild and repair. Coronavirus has slowed down the bushfire recovery and been placed on hold. Residents of the Upper Murray region are uncertain about what will happen next. Earlier this week, the government announced a new $650 million package to support bushfire-hit towns and regional communities with local projects and recovery plans. This comes after the government initially promised $2 million to bushfire communities. He said the funding would be set aside to help farmers, families and businesses. The summer bushfires burnt 18.6 million hectares, killing 35 people, and over 1 billion animals were killed. In a tweet that Michael McCormack posted on the 22nd of April, he said the government has not forgotten about the many people affected by the summer bushfires. "We will rebuild, reconstruct and get those communities back on their feet." I'm Sophie Yelse and you're listening to CSU News.
Student journalist Joseph Casalol up next talking about the increased media consumption due to COVID-19.
As the quarantine continues, and with no definite end in sight, I'm sure many of us have found ourselves becoming increasingly familiar with those sounds. I know I have. As the weeks go by, I have noticed the daily average screen time on my phone skyrocketing from 36 minutes a day to a whopping 3 hours and 45 minutes, and that doesn't even include time spent on my other devices. While I'd like to attribute this increase to something productive, like learning a new language on Duolingo, or attempting Chris Hemsworth's latest workout on Center, the truth is, this time has been consumed almost entirely by Netflix, YouTube, and other social media. But, surprise, surprise, I wasn't the only one who had seen a drastic increase in media consumption. Visual Capitalist, a website devoted to visualizing current trends, recently published an article exploring the different ways in which each generation has been consuming media since the outbreak. According to their survey, Gen Z, the generation I belong to, has seen a 51% increase in viewing online videos and 38% in online TV and streaming. It appeared as though my shift in media consumption was part of the norm. But why, out of all the generations, had Gen Z seen the greatest increase in online videos and video games? After discussing the topic with a few friends and taking a break from watching videos to actually think about why my consumption had changed, the answer most agreed upon was distraction. When the outbreak had begun, our screen time was devoted to news websites, programs, and Facebook, constantly awaiting updates. But as the days turned to weeks and weeks became months, the need to distract oneself had begun to outweigh the need to always be informed. At the beginning of the outbreak, I found myself checking for updates for what felt like 10 to 15 times an hour. But in recent weeks, that has dropped to about once a day. And as there is not a set date for when the quarantine will be lifted, my media consumption will likely continue to serve as a distraction.
Next up, Bayan Kelly discussing students returning to school and the lifting restrictions.
With COVID-19 restrictions being gradually lifted in New South Wales, all schools are expected students to go at least once a week to help stop the spread of COVID-19 while still engaging in face-to-face learning. This is in the hopes of returning full-time by term 3. I've asked a local Year 12 student who is currently sitting his HSC his experience and how he feels about the whole situation.
I'm dealing with it pretty well. I've got my organisation at done at home.
Although schools are likely to be returning, social distancing measures are still being enforced.
Definitely no inter-school competitions, there's no excursions. Physical education may continue, but should take place outdoors.
Many implementations have been put in place to ensure that schools can continue to be a safe environment for students and staff.
So we've been sent extra soap and hygiene supplies and hand sanitizer added to the daily general cleaning.
If every school follows the rules and does their part, then school and learning should be back by no time.
And finally, Sophie Galanti talks about the pressure felt by sport clubs due to the virus.
With the current COVID-19 lockdowns, sporting clubs are feeling the strain. Vice President of CSU Football Club, Emily Thurlow, says that their club is feeling the financial and cultural effects of it.
We've lost almost 50% of our players due to campus closure, so a lot of our players have had to return home, so we have lost almost 3 men's teams and about 2 women's teams all up.
Clubs are putting measures in place to keep members engaged.
So we've put in things like social memberships just so they can still get involved, and if the social aspects thing and the pubs and stuff open up, we can involve them in some of that.
Many clubs are having to put strategies in place to continue the partnership with sponsors.
So one of our main sponsors is Headspace, and obviously we can't really give a lot to them at the moment because we're not actually out on the pitch, but we have signed up. We've got 2 teams with CSU FC in the push-up challenge, so we're raising awareness for mental health, which is a prevalent condition in young adulthood. So we're really giving them some reasoning to keep us on board.
Emily says the main focus of her club right now is recovery.
Got a lot of, you know, culture to build back up again because a lot of that's been lost this year. So I think the main focus is keeping afloat this year, making sure players are involved, and, you know, hopefully the club will get a fresh start next year.
Sophie Glanty, 2MCE.
And that was this week's stories, presented by the journalists of CSU. I've been Valentine Altman.